Let me in. Shiba shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba shiba. Let me find that part of you. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Theater is all around you. Everybody wants to create and challenge and make you just, you know, revel in the fantasy world that they create for you. And one of the players that makes that fantasy world a reality is the Wee Players, the company that I personally love. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Ara Roy. Hello.
Hello. Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday to you. So, Ava, before we get into the projects that you have, tell us a little bit about the Wee Players, how you guys came into existence, whose brainchild was it, what was the inspiration, what made you guys want to do it?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I started the company when I was a freshman in college, actually, and it was in large part a response to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of started to look at the campus, the college campus, as this really beautiful background, but what if it was actually the background and set for performances? Mm-hmm. And so it sort of started as this experiment in using space and activating space and building a personal relationship with an environment that was extremely different than anything I had known before growing up. I grew up mm-hmm. in a very rural, quiet place and then went to a big college campus and started staging shows using the clock tower and the fountains and the beautiful buildings as kind of the backdrop for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then it pretty quickly also became this sort of social experiment where things were happening in these public places, and there would be some audience members who knew what was happening and where to be when to follow the performance along.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of folks who were just kind of going through there every day, going to class, going to the cafeteria, whatever, and would kind of come across these performances. And we would find that people would sort of drop what they were doing and join the parade, and
mm-hmm.
our audiences would kind of double and triple in size from the start of the show to the end. So it started in this way, sort of experimenting with space in what was at the time my laboratory, the campus. And I kind of continued to evolve this idea of all the world's a stage,
mm-hmm.
and everywhere I started going and spending time became possible performance environments, public parks, state parks, national parks, backyards, private venues, that kind of thing. But a real interest in kind of activating public space through performance, and in so doing, hopefully inviting people to look at the world in new ways, look at everyday spaces that we might walk through every day on our way to work or on our way to class,
mm-hmm.
and start to bring things into the environment that would invite and inspire and even challenge people to look at the everyday in new ways. That's kind of a quick backstory on how it all got started. And then we started having the privilege and opportunity to work in our state and national parks. And
mm-hmm.
we started doing things here in the Bay Area on Alcatraz Island, on Angel Island, at Fort Point under the bridge, and some of these very dramatic physical spaces
mm-hmm.
that have a very significant historical background, and places that people who live here or are visitors to the Bay Area are certainly familiar with these iconic islands and parks, but not necessarily engaging with them in this very, very personal way that
mm-hmm.
the shows allowed people to start seeing and engaging with some of these iconic landmarks in very unique and personal ways.
I love just the fact that you're doing your show and you get a more of a procession, because I know if I'm just sort of tootling around and I see something going on, I'm like, oh, well, what's going on? And I would be one of those people that joins the
yeah.
procession to see what
yeah,
is
totally.
Going on. Do you remember
it's
what
got a little bit of that flash mob kind of vibe, except it's often very structured. We're often
right.
working with Shakespeare and telling kind of a whole narrative arc. Mm-hmm. So it does have, in some cases, that quality of like, hey, what's going on? And,
yeah.
And people or passersby are welcome to kind of check it out for a scene or two or for an image. And one of the things that starts to happen, but visitors who are, or audience members who are ticketed kind of know where to be in order to see the show, follow mm-hmm. the show from mm-hmm. point A to point Z from the beginning all the way through. One thing that's really fun is that because of the way we stage things in the distance, above, behind, below, kind of activating the whole space, there's mm-hmm. a lot of opportunity to create images and tableaus and movement pieces and sound elements that are in the distance, mm-hmm. and again, above, behind, below, et cetera. So it's not just what you're looking at right in front of you. And this can also have a really fun added effect of blurring the boundary between the everyday and the heightened realm of the performance, where visitors might start to wonder, is that part of the show? Did they get that hawk to land on that right at this moment? Is that person all in green just jogging through San Francisco, or are they part of the show?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really fun aspect as well, is that this kind of boundary between what we expect and what we imagine starts to blur.
So was there ever a time when you were doing the show where the boundary blurred for you?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. You know, in some ways, there's at least one moment every show where that happens, because there's all this contribution from the natural world mm-hmm. that is totally beyond us and we can only be in conversation with. So I can remember times where we did, where the weather changed and it feels like part of the show. And that starts to feel like magic.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely perfect, but I know we didn't do it, and yet this raven that would come to the House of the Dead when we did Odyssey on Angel Island, like every day right on cue,
uh-huh.
I knew that we weren't doing that, and yet it seemed like it had to be that way. Or a time when we were doing Midsummer of Love on the top of Strawberry Hill
uh-huh.
in Golden Gate Park in Stowe Lake, and our two pucks were making the whole thing happen. They were wielding the magic. And one day at the end of the show, they kind of made a gestural movement and spoke some text, and almost instantaneously, this bank of fog like rushed in, and they really felt like, did we just make that happen? And of course, we know we didn't.
Right.
But I think that question invites us all to step into the imagination as a real place, as a real landscape,
mm-hmm.
And that our imaginations are powerful, and it's one of our most critical assets as human beings. But like any muscle, it needs to be exercised
sure.
in order to be strong.
Sure, sure, sure. Do you remember when you were on campus, that first show that you did that sort of lit the spark?
Yeah, I do. You know, the school that I went to is very beautiful and had a feeling of being very manicured, very beautiful, but very manicured, which
mm-hmm.
Growing up in a very rural environment was very different. And so at first I kind of felt like I didn't quite know how to relate to what felt a little bit more like a country club or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, what if we, you know, like I said, use the statuary and so forth. And so the first piece that we did was an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
And I staged the opening street brawl between the Montagues and the Capulets in the cafeteria at like high noon to see what would happen.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty fascinating because, you know, people felt like there was a real fight going on. The actors kind of jumped up on the tables and started yelling at each other.
Uh-huh.
But there's something different, because if you tune in and your ear starts to pick up, they're not using everyday language. They're using the Shakespearean language.
Right.
In that play, they happen to have these turns of phrase called biting their thumb at each other,
uh-huh.
which is essentially like flipping the bird, giving the middle finger, and
they're
biting their thumb at each other.
Uh-huh.
So there was this kind of interplay between it feeling very vital and immediate and real, but then this language that is heightened kind of helps us lift into the artistic experience or the poetic experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very inspiring to me, to both stage things in places where people are just going to be,
mm-hmm.
and then also lead them into places that are lesser known. So I think that one inspiration for me was, you know, really exploring the campus and discovering these kind of incredible places that you had to look to find,
mm-hmm.
little, you know, smaller sculpture gardens or a certain tree, or not the not the highlights of the environment, and then getting really inspired to like share those discoveries with people and stage the route of the play in such a way that we would start in a more iconic or familiar or well-trafficked, well-traveled location, mm-hmm. and then have that parade lead into places that were lesser known. And honestly, that initial inspiration has really continued all the way through today. I feel like we've had a lot of people over the years and at every show who certainly know about Alcatraz or know about Sutro Baths or mm-hmm. know about Golden Gate Park, mm-hmm. but have never seen or experienced that place in quite the same way as with a We Players production. And so that's been a big source of inspiration for me and continues to be, to invite people to kind of explore their own landscape
right.
and find out what else is in their backyard. Mm-hmm. They might have a favorite spot in Golden Gate Park, but the more you explore, the more you see, the more you look, the more you see. So we've had the pleasure of even folks who, you know, work in the park, have been there for years, sharing like, I've never been to that exact spot, or I've never passed through that area, or I've looked at Alcatraz, but I've never been there. That's a real joy is to bring people to kind of some of the hidden gems of the local environment.
Yeah, I know that the first time I ever went to the Maritime Museum was when you guys did, I forget which Shakespeare play it was, but it started out with them coming in from the water.
Rowing to shore.
Which one was that?
That's Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night.
That's a great example, Marilyn, because that one is like where the boundary almost got a little too blurry.
Oh, really?
Because what you're describing is that the beginning of that play is a shipwreck. Mm-hmm. And there are two twins, Viola and Sebastian, and they're separated during this shipwreck. Mm-hmm. And the scene starts with Viola coming to shore, and she thinks her twin brother has passed away in the storm. And so she's hysterical. She's crying and screaming, and she was literally being rowed in on a rowboat.
Right.
And there were a number of passersby, which is a good check of basic humanitarian response, that mm-hmm. there were very concerned citizens
Aww.
Who were like, there's a woman in distress. We need to call for help. Mm-hmm. And so pretty quickly we learned, oh, we need to really make sure that there are also people in park logo gear
sure.
on the boardwalk in these places where passersby are passing by to say, this is a part of a play, and to pass out programs, because in that case it got a little too blurry.
I understand.
Between someone in distress and someone acting as uh-huh. if they were in distress.
Yeah. She's a very good actress then. So I think that's amazing. So let's fast forward now. You guys have been all over the place. Where's your show that you're about to do right now?
Yeah. Well, right now we are actually really celebrating a wonderful partnership with California Shakespeare Theater, which is in Orinda.
Okay.
And they're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year and uh-huh. have a wonderful production of As You Like It on their main stage. Which is an outdoor amphitheater in Orinda. Very beautiful space. Worth the trek, San Franciscans.
Okay.
Worth the trek across the bridge out uh-huh. to Orinda.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful out there. And while this is not part of my staging, if you look to see, you will see red-tailed hawks and owls.
Ah.
And if you're really lucky, maybe even a coyote. There's a lot of wildlife out there. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So we are out there right now performing on one of the smaller stages. Our two-person show, Mother Lear, which is actually a show that is unlike some of these larger-scale shows I've been describing. This is a two-woman production that my collaborator Courtney Walsh and I co-wrote and co-perform
mm-hmm.
starting in 2017. And that show, unlike these larger shows, is built to travel and go to different environments. So we are there at Cal Shakes through October 2nd.
Okay.
We have a show tomorrow night, Tuesday at 7, and then we have three more shows after that, next Sunday at 1 o'clock, and the following Tuesday, Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, while we're out there at Cal Shakes, we're also debuting a really new for us project, which is kind of more of a hybrid visual art, performance art installation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Our Lady of the Moon.
Okay.
And it is an environmental installation that is inspired by the moon and the themes of cyclical impermanence and reliable change and emptying to refill, trusting that the new moon is a critical part of the phase and the light will return. So those are some of the themes of the piece. It's a visual art piece. Mm-hmm. It's there all the time so people can come to the campus and interact with the sculpture. And on select days and times, the moon goddess is present.
Ooh. Who's the moon goddess? Or what's the moon goddess?
That is Regina Leon.
Okay.
And she played our Alice. And I think you saw our production of Alice in Wonderland and Golden Gate Park.
I did.
So Regina plays Our Lady of the Moon. And, you know, it's from her 2 years. She's an incredible performer. And mm-hmm. also playing Alice for 2 years in the We Player style, where the audience is following mm-hmm. Alice throughout mm-hmm. Wonderland. Mm-hmm. She got a lot of practice being on 100% of the time. There's no offstage for Alice.
There
is no taking a break. There is just 100% with the audience for the full 2.5 hours of that production, mm-hmm. which was especially challenged in a good way by all the young people who came to that show who would just walk hand in hand with her.
Aww.
And ask her 1,000 questions.
So
she got a lot of practice kind of improvising in character. And so she's able from that experience to kind of translate that to what is more of a durational performance art piece, unlike our shows where there is a traditional theatrical arc narrative.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
This is more of a durational, cyclical, repetitive scene, but it's also very tailored to whoever is there, whether yesterday there was a group of 15 people sitting with her, mm-hmm. the time before there was one or two people at a time. So it can be very intimate mm-hmm. And very personal, and she interacts directly with the audience members. So those two projects are happening at California Shakespeare Theater through October 2nd. And again, I really encourage San Franciscans to make the trek, check it out. And then we also have a project on October 12th uh-huh. here in San Francisco that is a free event
okay.
that we'd love San Franciscans to come out to and join us on the Great Highway.
We love free, so go on.
Yeah. So are you familiar with this pilot program that's going on the Great Highway where it's closed to through traffic, to vehicular traffic?
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I used to walk it all the time because, you know, during the pandemic, it was closed the whole time. And then as we sort of eased our way out of the pandemic, although we still are in it, but you know, people still really like the Great Highway being closed so that you can walk and ride your bike and roller skate. So it's still closed to through traffic on the weekends.
Yeah. So it's from like noon on Friday through the end of the day on Sunday, closed to through traffic between Sloat and Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And this pilot program continues through 2025. But a group of, you know, invested neighbors and residents have kind of gotten together and created a friends organization and mm-hmm. have managed to get this initiative on the November ballot as something that might be approved as a permanent park.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, it'll just roll into San Francisco Recreation and Parks Department.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then the pilot program will, if it doesn't pass, the pilot program will still continue through next year.
Okay.
And so we're going to celebrate that for the moment, this park is, or this highway is park. And on October 12th, between noon and 4,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have 4 performers from our 2021 production, Psychopomp, which was during the pandemic and mm-hmm. was this guided meditative walk through McLaren Park,
mm-hmm.
Where you interacted one-on-one with these gods from mythology. So psychopomps are gods from different mythologies that lead the wandering soul through the liminal, through the in-between.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 4 tremendous actors coming on October 12th to reprise their role as their psychopomps. So we have Ling Ling Lee, who's a San Francisco native, who mm-hmm. is going to play Oxhead Horseface, which is the psychopomp from the Chinese mythology tradition.
Mm-hmm.
We have Pearl Morrill, who's an incredible dancer and improviser, who will be playing Hermes, and a very unique golden bird boy dance child hula hooping wonder version of Hermes. So these are not your traditional interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
We have the wonderful Nick Dixon, who is one of my favorite clowns and comics, and he is playing the Greek riverboat driver Charon mm-hmm. in a very unexpected way.
Okay.
And our 4th performer is the unparalleled Chris Steele, who just has many, many alter egos and performance chops and is based here in San Francisco. And she will be playing the Valkyries from the Norse mythology. And one thing that's especially fun, Chris has many identities and talents and manages to play the Valkyries as three entities in one. Mm-hmm. So that alone is worth seeing their tremendous ability to shapeshift in right before your eyes.
Okay.
And each of these four psychopomps will be stationed at a different intersection between Sloat, between Taraval and Lincoln on October 12th. And they'll be improvising, performing, interacting. They're visually spectacular. They'll be coming up with fun ways to involve the audience. There may be a few extra golden hula hoops for people mm-hmm. to join Hermes. We've got some other kind of ideas in the works, and that's on October 12th. And it's just a way for us to celebrate this highway turned park and celebrate our community and show, you know, celebrate what's possible when the highway is a park. So we hope people will come out and join us for that. Again, it's free. It's on October 12th, and it's going to be really fun.
And that's called Psychopomps?
Yeah, Psychopomp.
And what is a psychopomp?
Yeah, psychopomp is a fancy word for a god who's usually, traditionally, their job is to carry the newly deceased soul to the afterlife.
Okay.
But we're not really focused on death and the afterlife. We're mm-hmm. really focused more on this idea of being in between.
Sure, sure, sure.
And the idea of a walk mm-hmm. where you're walking, wandering, you're moving from one place to another, and you don't really know what's going to happen on the journey from here to there. But if your eyes are open and your sense of wonder is alert, that you might just see and discover things along the journey.
Okay.
So that's our inspiration. Actually first learned the word psychopomp from a Nico Case song, The Fox Confessor.
Mm.
And if folks start to look into it, as far as I can find, there's so far that in my some degree of research, there's pretty much a psychopomp in every mythology I can come across so far, including the Grim Reaper would be one of the most familiar ones.
Okay.
Who you have to follow. but again, we've got a much more comedic technicolor interpretation of these gods.
Got it. Now, when we talk about the Wii players, how is it a revolving troupe of people? Is there a solid cadre of people? How does it work?
Yeah. Well, it's always evolving. You know, I really love to build shorthand and trust and all those things that you can only build with friends, allies, collaborators over time. So
mm-hmm.
there's definitely a rotating group of familiar faces. Some folks have been with me since 2010, and we're actually celebrating our 25th anniversary
wow.
next year. So there's a number of folks that have been around and seen in many different productions over the years. You know, and that's something that takes a lot of time and intention to develop because, shocker, we don't live in a country, in a culture that kind of systemically supports or underwrites the arts.
Correct.
It's very, very hard to cultivate
yes.
a company model
yes.
here.
Very much so.
Because we don't have the resources to keep people on a payroll around,
mm-hmm.
you know, year round
mm-hmm.
or to pay for kind of ongoing company training between projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a lot of intention and effort to kind of keep bringing the same people back for productions to keep developing this shared vocabulary. And again, the way that we work is pretty unique. And the people who've been with the company for a long time really demonstrate that sensibility of being able to make pictures in space, kind of part dance, part visual art, part acting.
Mm-hmm.
and then at the same time, we're always open to new talents and new people who, you know, really connect with the way that we work. We have on our website, weplayers.org, a way for people to sign up on the mailing list and select preferences to hear about future audition opportunities
mm-hmm.
or future crew opportunities or volunteer opportunities. I hold a general's audition once a year, which I organize more like a workshop
mm-hmm.
so that it's really a chance for actors who are new to the company to get to know how I work and for me to get to know how they work. And we sort of start the conversation that way. I don't really do kind of auditions in the more traditional way. I feel like the way that we work, people have to really be into durational experiences. We're outside. We're often in extreme weather environments, you know, on the cliff above Sutra Baths or out on these islands where the wind is big, the fog is up. So there's a certain amount of physical rigor that is very, very different than a traditional stage. You know, sometimes even something as simple as a bathroom break is a half hour break because you got to hike half a mile to get to that space. So really try to start conversations with people and let them grow over time. And we're often, you know, doing smaller events. We have concerts and parties and other things like that where we are always looking for volunteers and people who like what we do to come in and either trade for trade their time for tickets or just start to get to know the company and look for a way in. We really try to activate all the senses. And so food is an element of all our productions. Sometimes there are people behind the scenes cooking, baking, picking up bread, donations, supporting the full sensory experience in many ways, in design capacities and hospitality capacities, in addition to the talent that is kind of on stage performing.
Excellent. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, so let's just remind our listeners when and where for the three things that we've talked about.
Thank you. Yeah. So weplayers.org, we as in you and me, players as in Let's play. Weplayers.org is where folks can find all the things I've been talking about and more. We also have a free film that is available that is a little love letter to San Francisco through the eyes of a clown. And we welcome you to watch that as well. So go to weplayers.org. Right on the homepage, there's a banner for Mother Lear, which is in performance at California Shakespeare Theater now through October 2nd. Our Lady of the Moon, with both the installation component and the performance component dates listed there through October 2nd. Sea Clown, which is a free film people can watch whenever they want. There's also a film version of Mother Lear, which people can stream online as well. And then the Psychopomp pop-up on the Great Highway is not on the website yet, but will be this time next week, and that is on October 12th. So folks can mark their calendars and then check the WePlayers website or jump on our mailing list. We are also planning a really exciting 25th anniversary season starting in early in the new year. So if you're listening and you're interested, please check us out and get in touch. We'll be in touch and share all our exciting plans for our 25th anniversary season.
Excellent. Well, Ava Roy, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I always look forward to your show. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
What a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And as always, you let me know when you want to come see the work.
Okay.
To share it with you.
Excellent. Okay, people of Earth, here's your opportunity. The We Players, they're out and about and they're in the world and you go to their shows and then you learn about a place on the planet that you maybe weren't all that familiar with or helps you see it in a new way. So you just go check them out, shall you?
Forever. Oh, say, can you see it's really such a mess? Every inch of her is a fighting mess. Giant pencil and lipstick tube-shaped flames continue to rain and cause screaming pain and the arctic stains from silver blue to bloody red as her feet find the sand and the sea. Is straight ahead. It's too bad that our friends can't be with us today. Well, it's too bad. The machine that we built would never save us. That's what they say. That's why they ain't coming with us today. And they also said it's impossible. Breathe underwater forever was a main complaint. And they also threw this in my face. They said, anyway, you know good and well, it would be beyond the will of God and the grace of the king. Grace of the king. So my darling and I make love in the sand to salute the last moment ever on dry land. Our machine has done its work, fed its part well, without a scratch on our body, and we bid it farewell. Starfish and giant foams greet us with a smile. Before our heads go under, we take a last look at the killing noise.
Warp the outer style.
Listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Yes, that is Electric Ladyland. Yes, that is the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And this is called 1983, A Merman I Should Turn to Be. It is 12:39, and you're so very, very lucky today because I've got Brian Copeland, who's got a show that you're going to want to see that we can't say the entire name of, but you're going to figure it out because you're very smart people. Welcome, Brian Copeland.
See, this is always the trick with this show. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you dancing with your FCC license.
So Brian, you've got a show called The Great American ... Show.
Right. The Great American, we'll say S. We can say S, right?
Mm-hmm.
The letter S.
Mm-hmm.
The Great American letter S show is the name of the show. And it's a series of monologues about life in the age of Trump. You know how
mm-hmm.
you know how we have changed and the things we've had to deal with as a country and as individuals over the course of the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I originally did it with Charlie Barron, who's a Bay Area solo performance legend, and we did it around the 2020 election. I did two monologues, and he did two monologues, and it went great. We were filling places up, and then the pandemic shut us down.
Mm-hmm.
So once the election happened and the Trump lost, I kind of thought, okay, it's over. We're done with it. And then, you know, here we are again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a number of emails from people who came back in 2020 who said, you've got to bring it back. You've got to bring it back. So I thought about it, everything going on, and yeah, I got to bring it back. So Charlie is not performing on this one. So I'm doing this one by myself,
mm-hmm.
and I have updated the two monologues that I did before because a lot of things have changed over the last 4 years,
mm-hmm.
and I've written two brand new ones. And we open on Thursday. The first show is on Thursday
at
the Martian Berkeley. I'm doing right now. We're probably going to add some, but right now a total of six performances at places around the Bay Area. So I'm at the Marsh this Thursday and next Thursday in Berkeley, and I'm at the Marsh in the City on the 10th. Then I'm in Alameda, all three at a Playhouse on the 12th,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to Marin Center on the 17th of October. So, but it's fun, you know, it's entertainment, it's social commentary, but even more than anything else, I think, is it's get out the vote. It's just to remind people that no matter who you're voting for, your voice is important.
Yes, yes, because I've maintained that, you know, if voting weren't important, they wouldn't, you know, expend so much energy trying to tell you that it wasn't important.
That's exactly it. That's a great way of putting it. If it didn't mean anything, they wouldn't try so hard to keep you from doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
you hit it right on the head.
So I was in looking at the material that was sent over. I understand that a long-term mentor entered the other side of the political spectrum from you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The way this whole thing started was David Ford, who's been my director and my collaborators since I did Not a Genuine Black Man 20 years ago. So all seven solo plays I've done, I've been David's worked with me on, was doing a performance festival of his students, because he teaches how to do one-man shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Times Unseen. And he asked me if I'd do a 15-minute spot. I said, sure. So I wrote this piece, and what the piece was about was someone who was very, very close to me when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And she got upset with me. I had not talked to her in years.
Mm-hmm.
And she got upset with me over something I posted on Facebook about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And asked me to call her. And I was just shocked, you know, to find out that that's, you know, where she stood on the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really just kind of a thing to wrestle with, because, I mean, I'm going to call it what it is. The racism is so incredibly blatant, and this was the least racist person I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And how can you say that you love me when I'm an African-American man, but on the other hand, walk into a voting booth and vote for somebody who thinks that, you know, I'm less than?
Mm-hmm.
Or if I lived in, you know, in Ohio, because of the color of my skin, I'd be eating people's pets.
Mm-hmm.
How can you, that dichotomy I wrestled with. So that was the first monologue. It's called Something in the Air. And it's just about how things just changed. You know, I mean, the day after the election, in 2016, I was driving into, I live in the East Bay. And I was driving into the city to do, I was working at KGO at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving in to do my show. And I was in a 68 Ford Mustang. And that car has no factory side view, side mirror on the passenger side. So I accidentally cut a car off because it was in my blind spot.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in the car pulls up next to me, and he's a white guy, a baseball cap, and driving a Prius, and yells the N-word at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then kept going. And this, again, the day after the election. And I felt like, wow, you know, I had not been called that word not to my face anyway,
mm-hmm.
literally in years. And it was at that point that I realized, you know, it's almost like that election and the results of that election gave a certain faction of our nation permission
mm-hmm.
to let all of the ugliness that they would have, you know, kept inside or kept in themselves, it gave them permission to spew it in public and spew it wherever they wanted to. And that was, you know, that's where that monologue came from. And I do want to mention that it is a lot, you know, it's a like all my shows, if you've ever seen my work, it's a combination of funny and heavy. Some of the stuff's heavy, some of it's really funny. It's a mix of comedy and drama
mm-hmm.
With social commentary. You know, just about how I see things. And it was hard. The hardest part of this to write was one of the new monologues, which is the ending one, because last time we were able to end on hope.
Mm.
You know, we were able to end on a vision of hope, and I had to really, really try to find it, you know. And then we had some changes. I don't want to go into this. I don't want to get things away that are in the show.
Sure.
But it was really difficult to write because things just seemed so bleak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's you know, it's a show. I'll be flat out. You know, I say in the poster, if you love Trump, you'll hate this show.
Mm.
When we say that on the poster, we're telling you straight up, if you love Trump, well, you'll hate this show. But if you want to come in and you want to keep an open mind, you know, come on in. But it's, you know, more than anything else, you know, register to vote. Register to vote and go in and do it.
So you say the show is opening this Thursday.
This Thursday at the Marsh in Berkeley will be the first show at 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just doing Thursday nights.
Okay.
We're just going to keep it to Thursday nights. So, yeah, Thursday the 26th, this Thursday and next Thursday, the Marsh Berkeley. Following Thursday, the Marsh San Francisco. I have one Saturday show that we're doing, and that's in Alameda at the Altarena Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following Thursday at the 17th at the Marin Center.
Very
in
cool.
In San Rafael.
Now, how long have you been doing one-person shows?
This is my 20th anniversary.
Wow.
This is the 20th, in April, it was the 20th anniversary and the 1,000th performance of Not a Genuine Black Man, my first show, which was supposed to run for 6 weeks and ended up becoming the longest-running solo show in Bay Area theatrical history. It ran in San Francisco for 7 years, ran off-Broadway, ran in Los Angeles, 30 American cities. Rob Reiner is working with me to develop it for television right now.
Very cool.
So that was a big April was a we had a whole big celebration at the Marsh for it. So yeah, so I've been doing it 20 years, and again, it was supposed to be 6 weeks. You know, I've been doing stand up for 20 years, and I was booked at the Improv.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had booked for 6 weeks to do the show, then I was booked at the Improv, but people kept coming, so the show kept getting extended. And the next thing I know, here I was there for 7 years.
So okay, so you were doing improv, and then what made you decide to write a one man show to begin with? Since you were already, you know, an established comic.
Well, no, I wasn't doing improv. I was doing stand up.
I mean, stand up. Sorry, I misspoke.
At the Improv Comedy Club.
Okay. Yeah.
In San Jose, and I started stand up when I was 18. The week after I graduated from high school, that week I started.
Wow.
And did it for 20 years and worked with people like, you know, I toured with Smokey Robinson and Aretha Franklin and Dionne Warwick.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to play a lot of really cool places, Universal Amphitheater and Constitution Hall. And but I just got to a place where after doing it for 20 years that I wanted, a couple of comics had done one-man shows. And I'm going to say one-man shows because they were men, and that's what they called them. Now, today we call them solo shows or solo plays.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about it was with comedy, stand-up, it's all got to be about jokes.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be joke. It's about LPMs, we call it, laughs per minute.
Okay.
And with this, it didn't have to be all joke. If you did a solo show, you could do drama as well as do comedy.
Okay.
And the great thing about it is that the drama makes the comedy funnier because the comedy is a release from the drama. And the comedy, since it's on the other end of the specter, makes the drama a lot deeper, maybe is the word, than if it were just a straight drama with no comedy.
Right.
So I just found that I just really loved the form. Again, I never expected to do, you know, I never expected it to turn into a 20-year career. As I said, it was 6 weeks. It was just something I always wanted to do, and I did it, and I'd be on to something else was what the plan was. You know, it went well, and I did another one. That went well, and so you know, here I am, 7 shows later.
So, is there a rhythm or a structure to doing a one man show that you've eased into over the years?
Actually, I got the best advice I got, and I should mention, by the way, too. I'm going to teach a one-time masterclass because people have been asking me that question you just asked me
a
lot.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay, I'm going to do a masterclass one time, and I'm going to do it over Zoom, and it's tomorrow night.
Oh.
And if you go to briancopeland.com, there's a link to how you sign up for it. It's going to be tomorrow night, Tuesday, from 7 to 9, and I'm going to tell everything I know and everything I learned about how I put my shows together and how you do a solo show. But the first advice I got, Rob Becker, who was a very dear friend of mine, and we came up in stand-up together, he put together one of the first solo shows called Defending the Caveman. And what it was about is how men are different from women in relationships and so forth. And that show started in San Francisco at what is now Biscuits and Blues. It was the Improv back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And went to Broadway and ended up being the longest running solo show in the history of Broadway. So I asked him for some advice, and he told me to read Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Okay.
And because what Campbell does in that book is he talks about how if you look at all of the fables that we've heard and all of the folklore and the folk tales, they all have most of the same basic elements.
Mm-hmm.
And George Lucas took that book and used that paradigm for Star Wars.
Right, the hero's journey.
And that's what it is that you have to do. There are certain things that happen. There's the hero's call to journey, call to adventure is what mm-hmm. it's called, where the hero first, you know, gets set out on what the journey is. There's a wise elder. You know, in my plays, my wise elder is my grandma. You know, in Star Wars, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
There is always a Jonah and the whale kind of a moment where the hero goes into a place or a situation, or, you know, in Star Wars, it was in that monster or whatever, and then they're different. They're changed when they come out the other end. And in my plays, it's different things. You know, Not a Genuine Black Man, it was about going into San Leandro when it was 99% white,
right,
and I'm black, and how I was changed coming out the other end of that. So they're all different, but they all have those same beats in them.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, the other thing is I like that's my own. It's not Campbell's. I shouldn't say my own, but it's not from Campbell. It's just this rhythm of going funny, heavy, funny, heavy, funny, heavy.
Got it.
Because as I said, the way it works when you're able to put those two things together is they amplify each other. It's funnier
mm-hmm.
because of the drama, and the drama is more emotional because of the comedy.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time, so I just want you to reiterate for our listeners when and where for both your show and for your Zoom masterclass.
Okay, yeah. And this is what masterclass is. It's a one-time only. I will never do it again.
Okay.
It is just one time.
Okay.
And it'll be over Zoom tomorrow night at 7. Don't wait till the last minute because you're going to have to go and sign up someplace else. So just go to briancopeland.com. briancopeland.com,
mm-hmm.
and there is a link that you can click that'll take you to where you go in order to sign up. Also, if you go to briancopeland.com, there is a, and go to Now Playing, there's a list of all the places where the Great American S Show is playing. But the first one is Thursday night, this Thursday the 26th, at the Marsh in Berkeley. They're all at 7 o'clock. Every place I'm playing, they're all at 7 o'clock. So come on out to laugh. I want people to laugh, but most importantly, I want people to think.
Excellent.
I want to make America think again.
Yeah, make America think again. Mata. Mm-hmm. We'll say Mata. Well, Brian Copeland, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I always have fun when I talk with you.
Well, yay. All right. Well, break a leg at the show.
All right. Thank you. I'll see you out there.
All right. All right. People of Earth, you can go check out Brian Copeland's show, The Great American Blank Show, and enjoy it. And you can visit his website to find out about the Zoom masterclass. There's so much to be done in this world, so many things. And if you're not doing them, you're making that choice not to do them, because there's lots of stuff that you can do. In fact, you could go see the show on opening night, because I have a pair of tickets to give away. So if you want them, give me a call. 415-346-5376. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and tiddly-doo.